plastic explosives, primed and attached to a timer. But there was a manual override on the bomb. He saw that he was trapped, but he grinned. He could still set off his bomb and take these Americans with him in death. With Uchichil as his leader, he feared failure much more than mere death. Someone farther down the trail fired a Foscren, flooding the whole area with a stark white light. It flushed the lurking Russian from his hiding place, sending him scampering toward the blind corner of the trail. He clutched the bomb to his chest like an undelivered birthday present. Oki spotted him and fired from the hip, the bullets lancing through the dirt all around the Russian. Miraculously, Grom wasn't hit, though he stumbled and fell, nearly dropping the bomb. Oki, lusting to kill, dropped the empty M16. Not bothering to draw her machine pistol from its holster, she went for the cowering man with only her long-bladed Italian stiletto. Ryan was about to shoot at the Russian when he saw the danger of hitting the girl. Also, as clear as day in the light of the Foscren, he saw the man fumbling with the parcel.
Fireblast. He's priming a fucking bomb. Watch it, Oki! He's got a bastard bomb!
If she heard him, she gave no sign of it. Never deviating from her attack, Oki launched herself at the Russian like an arrow. Grom saw her coming and held up the package of explosives as though it were some holy relic that warded off evil.
So long, Oki.
Only Ryan heard JB, and as usual, the man was right. Grom's intention had been to throw the bomb toward Ryan and the others, but Oki's unexpected attack thwarted that. He was taken so much by surprise that he was still holding the ticking bomb as she landed on him. The knife struck with practiced, lethal accuracy high at the side of the deaf man's neck, just below his right ear, opening the carotid artery in a spouting gush of crimson. Grom was dying as he fell. His last act was to grab the girl's green sweater, clutching her to him in his death spasm. Ryan ducked, feeling the shockwave tug his dark hair. The booming noise echoed across the valley, bouncing flatly off the dam. When Ryan stood up, his face was wet with gore, and he felt sickened at the sound of human flesh landing all around him. A thin pall of smoke blew across the plateau by the ghost town, and then was gone. The rising wind carried with it all trace of the woman whose name had been Oki. Uchichil signaled the rest of the attacking party to retreat. With the element of surprise gone, and his party whittled down to only 19 men and 4 women, he couldn't risk a frontal assault and an all-out firefight farther up the hillside, where the massive dam loomed over them, dominating the valley. They assembled at a spot where the river ran fast and narrow, barely 15 feet wide, with a thin veil of gray ice growing at its edges.
What now?
They can go nowhere. There is the one road, and we control that here by the river. We have them trapped, my brother. Let us wait, and they will come to us and beg us for mercy.
His comrades bellowed with laughter.
By the balls.
What are you yakking about, JB?
Those bastards got us by the balls. No other road in or out. We go down, and they pick us off like flies in molasses.
We're not licked yet. We still have a wild card.
Doc sat against a stone wall that still carried a faded advertisement for a canned beer as he listened to the exchange.
I have never ceased to wonder at the enigmatic nature of your discourse in moments of dire stress.
What's your idea, Ryan?
Lori moved beside Ryan, staring wonderingly into his face.
We live?
Sure. We live right up to the moment that we start dying.
He then turned to the armorer.
That missile you found.
The launcher was like a sledge. The red and white missile rested on top of the sledge, with torn strips of tarpaulin swaddling it like a baby. JB and Finn peeled away the covering, revealing the sleek, elegant shape. It was about the length of a tall man, and had 4 triangular fins at the rear. There were letters and numbers stenciled on the casing, black on white and white on red. USAF A/T/M SD4 TRD/C 24942 1/1/00. And in a circle, with arrows pointing to it, there was a single word. Active.
There's another one without active on it. This could take out a dozen war wags in one go. Never seen a baby this size, still juiced and ready to go.
But it's not a lot of good against the scattering of Russians down by the river. It's not any personnel, is it?
No, but we can't be too picky right now, can we?
They all stood around the launching cradle. Ryan noticed that someone, now long dead and turned to dust, had scrawled a girl's name, Brandy, on the live missile in green paint. For a moment, he wondered who she'd been. It was tempting to launch it in the dark. The effect would be more terrifying, the shock more total. But in the end, JB agreed with Ryan that it would be best to wait until first light. The party split up. JB stayed in the narrow valley with Doc and Lori. Ryan, Hen, Finn, and Christy moved carefully down the track, stopping about 150 feet above where Uchichil and the Narodniki commanded the river crossing. Finnegan pointed to the shifting blur of the Russians' animals.
Could hit their horses there.
And tell them we're here before we set up the missile? Bad plan. We just stop here and wait and watch. We move when the time comes.
Major Zemyanin was also watching the river crossing. His cavalry unit was a scant couple of miles off on the far side of the valley. He lay on a promontory of cold rock. The sniper, Corporal Solomentsov, was beside him. The party didn't allow muties in the fighting patrols. Indeed, they were unofficially being purged, and Solomentsov's eyesight was so good that the major suspected that he must have a muti strain in him. However, the sniper was valuable to the militia, and Zemyanin had never mentioned his suspicions to anyone.
How many?
More than four hands and less than five, Major. They crossed the bottom of the trail.
And higher?
The sniper hesitated, pressing the Zeiss binoculars to his eyes.
Not easy against the dark rock in this light, Major.
But?
But I think less than two hands. I'm sorry I cannot see more.
It was enough for the Major, and he took back the glasses, smiling. It had been a long, stern chase, longer than he guessed when he first received his orders. Now he was in America. It lay open before him, begging to be possessed, like a complacent whore with her legs spread wide. Tomorrow could be the best day of his life. The first pink fingers of light were creeping over the eastern side of the valley, touching the concrete of the dam. The wind had veered more to the south, bringing the promise of heavy snowfall. The air tasted foul.